You're listening to Alaska HomeWise, brought to you by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center and the UAF Cooperative Extension Service. Save energy. Save money. Become HomeWise.
Hello and welcome to Alaska HomeWise, brought to you by the UAF Cooperative Extension Service and the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. My name is Ty Keltner. Well, over the last year, we've harped a bit about the evils of burning green wood, and we've provided pointers on wood burning safety and efficiency. Well, there are actually other uses for Alaskan woods besides burning them. Ilya Benesch, our building and energy guru, is going to highlight those today. How are you doing today, Ilya?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Days are getting longer, so I can't complain.
First, tell me a little bit about how you came up with today's topic about woods.
Well, I have to admit that part of what spawned this notion was the fact that I've seen some absolutely gorgeous, solid, large diameter tree rounds that are destined for the woodpile. And as a carpenter who works a lot with local woods, I can't help it, but a little voice in me kind of wails when I see that. I mean, yeah, the big rounds, they sure do make nice firewood, but they have other uses too.
In Fairbanks, white spruce, birch, and cottonwood are the most abundant types of larger trees that can serve other purposes besides firewood. So tell me a little bit about spruce. We'll start with that.
Yeah, spruce is the species that is utilized the most commonly and has the greatest commercial value. And a big part of that is it's used for a lot of structural framing, and so it lends itself well to large-scale projects. As a start, there are two types of spruce common to interior Alaska. That's the white and the black spruce. Of the two, the white spruces are those that reach sizes large enough to be suitable for milling into lumber. Black spruces, on the other hand, are much smaller and scrubbier in stature, and they rarely get over 10 inches in diameter, and really a 10-incher is it's a pretty big one, but they can become quite old, so looks are deceiving. Unfortunately, in Fairbanks, much of the area was logged bare in the first half of this century. Pretty much all the local woods we have here were used for home heating, but also to run the steamships that carried the supplies to Fairbanks. And also the woods were used on a really large scale in the mining industry to thaw the frozen ground to get to the gold-bearing gravels, and also to run the other steam-powered equipment the mines needed. The end result of all that was fairly widespread devastation early on, and if you look at some of the really old mining photos, you'll see a muddy background filled with stumps and some miners standing in the front, and it's pretty obvious the miners had other priorities. What this means today is that spruce trees older than 100 years in the immediate Fairbanks area are rather uncommon. If you go further out, say Chena Hot Springs Road or Murphy Dome Road or some of the local logging roads, you'll have a much better chance of finding old-growth white spruce. And I can think of one hillside in particular, and it's a secret, but that has several trees with a diameter of about 36 inches at chest height. And those are trophies that pretty much come close to breaking records. And you look at a tree that size, it's an Alaskan spruce, and the scale of it is really quite something. A tree that diameter is probably over 200 years old, could easily be. I did count rings on one. It came out to about 190, so those trees have been around a while. In terms of diameters, I'd say any trees upwards of 20 inches in diameter would be prized by log builders and timber framers, and they can really highlight the beauty of local spruce in the form of exposed logs or even squared timbers. And when it comes to dimensional lumber, white spruce is suitable for most construction purposes. However, I'd stress that in order for the lumber to be used for residential framing and in load-bearing applications in particular, it may be required by code to have a grade stamp. This doesn't mean it can't be used without one, and lots of people use it in places where that's not an issue, but just be aware that if an inspector or an engineer is involved, you'll want to let them know in advance if you'll be using local wood, just to be on the safe side, and they can pretty readily work that in because span tables are readily available online for spruce, and so you can also have that as an option if you're looking at sizing. The framing lumber you'll find at the lumber yards is usually Douglas fir, and that's stuff we get shipped up from Canada or the west coast of the U.S., and it's significantly stronger than spruce when it comes to load-bearing applications. It's not always, but usually, and so when you're sizing beams and joists, you'd want to be more conservative than you would, say, be with fir. Once again, I'd say defer to the chart or an engineer. But another resource that's just come out is an excellent publication by the UAF Cooperative Extension Service called Allowable Lengths for Round Timber Poles. And it's available for download, and it gives load-bearing information for not only spruce, but also birch and cottonwood. So if you're looking at sizing a ridge log or something like that, that book is really good. Also, and here's an important concept to keep in mind, when you're considering building with local lumber, the strength properties of the spruce when dry, they're going to be considerably higher than when it's green. For lack of a better word, green spruce can be pretty elastic, and so if you're going to use local spruce for rafters or joists, I'd highly recommend air drying them first. Green lumber is defined by the timber industry as having a moisture content that exceeds 19%. And I know from personal experience that green spruce rafters can develop a sag if they're fresh cut and installed without a chance to dry. In my case, I installed the rafters and then put the roof on, so it had some weight on there, but these were, you know, fresh cut, green, and in my case, it didn't affect the load-bearing aspect at all, but I was putting paneling on the ceiling inside, and from the loft, you could sight down the paneling, and so you could see a visible downwards bow where the rafters had sagged about half an inch or so, and so that's not what I wanted the client to see, and so I had to go back and shim all that out. When it's dry, however, the spruce is very strong, and even better, if it's straight-grained and clear, which means free of knots, it's prized for many other uses besides construction. Some pretty good examples would be stringed instruments. It's got really good tonal qualities. It's also used in boat and plane building. The spruce also makes beautiful tongue and groove paneling with lots of character. I would say, again, if you're looking at spruce paneling in a house, I'd recommend drying it well, using a water-based finish with low off-gassing and good UV resistance. This will keep the house healthy, and it will also preserve the color and the finish by minimizing yellowing from exposure to sunlight. I've seen some spruce paneling, you know, it was milled green, put up, and it actually shrank enough that the tongues and the grooves separated that you could see between them. So it's well worth taking the extra time if you can do it and make sure it's dry.
I understand that just as when you want to burn wood, it has to be dry, and woodworking is the same way as you've been mentioning that.
Seasoned woods for woodworking in our climate should contain about 12% moisture, but they should be acclimated in the workspace for several weeks and checked with a moisture meter. Moisture meters are pretty easy to get, and they've come way down in price. You can get them from anywhere, I would say from $50 to $200, and if you're serious about working with local lumber, it's cheap insurance. And the safest thing to do when you're getting ready to turn rough lumber into paneling or furniture is to store it in your shop environment for several weeks to let it acclimate. When it comes to drying lumber fresh from the mill, typically you'd stack it outdoors with wooden spacers between the rows so airs can circulate freely through the pile. Spacers are called stickers. They're usually scraps left over, and they're cut between 1/2 to 1 inch thick, and that leaves enough room between the layers of lumber that air can get through there just fine. The top of the pile should be covered with something that'll protect it, allow the wood to shed water, keep water from running in there. Old or damaged metal roofing works well. Sometimes the lumber yards will have some damaged roofing they'll let go pretty cheap. One thing I've learned too is that to minimize the cupping and the warping in the top layers, because they're not weighed down as much, is to take some cargo straps and just strap the whole pile and keep it under tension. As the woods dry, they will have a tendency to move, and Alaska woods are certainly no exception here. They actually move more than a lot of the other woods we get shipped in. In fact, I'd make it a qualifying statement for all interior Alaska woods. Spruce, birch, and aspen all lead pretty hard lives in our extreme climate, and this is often reflected in their workability. The trees will grow in conditions where they're more exposed on one side than another, or they're competing for space, or they have other kinds of stresses, and this can lead to having a higher percentage of reaction wood or defects. So if you're looking at milling lumber for furniture or something like that, you may see more waste than you would typically from, say, a hardwood that's been imported that you would buy at the store. A really good example of reaction wood would be a birch tree that grew nice and tall but branched and leaned to one side. This isn't uncommon. There's quite a few of those out there. But this creates uneven tensions in the wood, and as the different sides of the tree are fighting for gravity, they're in an imbalance. And so more often than not, if you cut a board that grew under these conditions, it might really want to warp and twist as the stresses in the grain react to the cut. Sometimes that'll make the board unusable, so you kind of have to factor that in. And like I said earlier, trees will have, many of them at least, will have a high percentage of defects such as knots. Depending on what you might be using the birch for, this can actually be an advantage. If you're trying to highlight the look of the wood, such as in paneling, the knots can be really beautiful. In other cases, such as the legs on a table, you might want to factor in higher waist, as it might be more difficult to find pieces of straight and stable grain for the purpose. Fortunately, Alaskan hardwoods like birch and aspen can be had from local mills for reasonable prices, so it usually never hurts to buy more extra maybe than you would typically need. And this gives you a much better selection, too, to choose from when you're looking for likely pieces or trying to match colors or trying to match certain kinds of knots, things like that.
We're going to take a break right here. Ilya Benesh and I will be right back with more on Alaskan woods here on Alaska HomeWise.